Speaker tonight is Miss Linda. That's her little boy over there, Otto. He's adorable. And Mr. Tito.
Oh, there's a timer up here. Linda alcoholic. Really nervous, and I knew I would be, so I figured I would ask everyone to just join me in a short little prayer. God, as I understand... Oh, no, not that one. as I understand you, please give me strength and courage. May your words be my own. And please help someone to relate and hear something that helps to keep them coming back. Thy will be done. Amen.
Amen.
I was born here in Santa Maria in 1987. I'm turning 28 this year. You know, I didn't have a rough childhood. And Jesse, thank you so much for sharing all of that with us. That was great. It's helping me get through this. When I was in preschool, my mother was in a very bad car accident that left her with a lot of nerve damage, and the surgery that they did to help her left her with a lot of pain. And not that it was completely the doctor's fault, but they had her on a lot of prescription drugs, and that was the norm in my life for a long time. And at 12 years old, she finally, hang on, let me back up a little bit. My father is a carpenter, and so he was gone most of the day working to provide for his family, but then when he would get home, he would either leave to go fishing or hunting, or hang out in the garage with his buddies drinking beer. The normal for him was, you know, I'm thinking a six-pack of Budweiser or more. And watching my mother fall asleep while doing a lot of different things, cutting up vegetables, driving, walking, doing laundry, that was normal for me. I didn't know there was a problem with that. And when I was 12 years old, she went to detox, and it finally clicked that that wasn't normal and that there was a problem with that. And while she was gone, I was in junior high, and I really started acting out, getting a lot of detentions. And I think that was around about the time that I started cutting. That was a way for me to control the pain, because it was, you know, it was in my hands. It was a pain that I created that no one else had their hands, no one else had control over it. So control is definitely an issue of mine. And she came back from detox the day before my 13th birthday. And I had a new mom. And I wasn't used to that. I was used to my sister taking care of me and kind of being able to make my own decisions. And so I really started rebelling, trying not to listen to her. And since my dad wasn't around very much, you know, she was really left alone to try and control my control issues. And I'm a non-confrontational person, so when she would tell me, go clean your room, I would say, okay. And I would go to my room and play with my toys or watch TV. I wouldn't do what she told me to do, but, you know, the easiest way to avoid confrontation was just to say, okay. I started smoking cigarettes at about 10 years old and tried drinking for the first time at the age of 12. And I loved the way it made me feel, just that warm, fuzzy feeling, couldn't stop laughing. And my sister, who had given me the, I believe it was like a orange 50-50 drink that you blend with ice, and she was terrified because I wouldn't stop laughing. She thought that she was going to get caught. And then I remember my first drunk. You know, there was never any gradual step to my drinking. I drank alcoholically pretty much since the first time. I remember that time that my sister wanted me to stop. I wanted more. I wanted that feeling to keep going. But my first drunk, my friend Catherine and I snuck out and found an ice chest at the top of someone's driveway. This was up at Lake Nacimiento. And it had Jack Daniel's hard Coca-Cola and a big bottle of vodka. And I had no idea that you could get that intoxicated. And the last thing that I remember is falling down while I'm trying to walk and not being able to feel my knees hitting the ground. And I thought that that was just the coolest thing ever, to not feel pain. And then I blacked out. I woke up to my friend Catherine whispering in my ear, Linda, you passed out last night. Your dad had to carry you to bed. So we got caught for sneaking out. And my friend had to take care of me all night while I was throwing up in my sleep. The next morning, my dad comes bursting into the room nice and loud and tells us to go clean up our mess out front because we had had a water balloon fight before we snuck out. So I'm in the blazing sun with a hangover cleaning up water balloons. It was very degrading. And then at school the next day, everyone knew about it because my friend didn't know that that would be embarrassing. So when I found out that you could ditch class without getting caught, I really started not going to class at school and leaving to smoke pot with my friends and stealing vodka from my dad, filling up a water bottle and bringing it to school because I thought that that was how I made friends, was to bring drugs or alcohol to where they would like me. I ended up getting truancy letters, and my mom walked me to all of my classes. You know, a lot of parents, they threaten that, but she actually went through with it and walked me to all my classes. It was one of the worst days in high school. But it didn't take long before I ditched class again. And she threatened to walk me to my classes again. And so when she hopped in the shower, I ran away. And she found me a couple hours later. I wasn't very good at hiding. And I got caught for everything I ever did wrong. Trying to think forward. I definitely had a problem with authority, and when my parents got mad at me when I lied and I got mad that they didn't believe me, I would run away. And so I ran away to my grandma's, and she thought she was going to be able to solve all my problems. She helped me get a job. She bought me a car. Just did all the nicest things, and I did exactly the same thing that I was doing to my parents. I was going places I wasn't supposed to. I was lying about it. I was drinking, and I made my grandma cry. And to see her cry, it hurt for about 5 minutes, and then I was on to the next thing. Unfortunately, that's, you know, where my disease is. You care for a second, and then you don't. It's you know, selfish self-centeredness is the root of our problems, and I am a very selfish person. At 18, I moved up to the lake, and 5 days after moving up there, I wrecked my car drinking and driving, and luckily, cops never got involved, but then I was stuck on the ranch without a car, and I was stealing from people, being extremely dishonest, and ended up getting kicked out of the place that I was living because I stole from him. And so my parents came and helped me get all my stuff, and I moved back in with my parents. And I believe right around that time, that was when I got involved with meth. And that really took me downhill really fast. I did it for about a year. And I remember calling my sister and crying and telling her what I was doing and telling her that I couldn't stop. And she said, well, I'm coming down this weekend. This is Thanksgiving. She said, well, just don't do it this weekend. Just while I'm there. And I said, okay. And I couldn't even keep that promise. I was out and about, didn't care that she was visiting, that I didn't get to see her very often. And I believe it was only like 5 days later I got arrested. I got an 11-550. Oh, that happened before I moved up to the lake. I tried moving to the lake to escape that. That's what happened. After moving back, I got in trouble for shoplifting, which ended up being a good thing because instead of being able to just go on probation for the 11-550, it kind of like upped the charge, I guess, and they put me into Prop 36, which brought me into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous. And, you know, I got my first taste of a clean life, and but still had control issues, you know, and I wouldn't stop smoking pot. So, you know, I went to jail 3 times in 2006, once for smoking pot, the second time for smoking pot, and then I got put into a sober living home because I told the judge it was all my parents' fault, that it was because I was stuck living with them. Nothing was ever my fault. And so they put me into a sober living home. It was at Lazy Days. And that was probably one of the worst 3 months ever. The owner was very, she had been in recovery for a good amount of time, but it was her first sober living home that she had ever opened up, and the rules changed every day, and it was just very chaotic. And I was a very manipulative person, and I'm still working on that, but I'm getting better. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore, and I left. Back up a little bit. Attraction rather than promotion. I was attracted to a young man in the rooms and went to jail for the third time because we had a no contact order. And after I left the sober living home, they found pictures of us together, the little photo booth at the mall. Stupid, have that on me. And I went to jail for 3 weeks. I was so excited. I got a love letter in the mail. And I was like, all right, I'm going to do this. I'm going to stay sober for him. And there's a reason why they say don't date anyone the first year of recovery. I didn't stay sober for myself. It was, you know, it was all about him. And I was faking my program. Drank at 1 month sober, but didn't tell anybody. I continued to collect time. And when I had a year, I was just full of guilt because I knew it wasn't a true year. And 2 days later, I smoked pot, and it continued to get worse from there. I was just hiding it and hiding it. And then I finally came out and was like, I relapsed, because it was just killing me. And he told me that he couldn't be with someone that was drinking, you know, because he had a real program. And I said, okay, I'll do it the right way. So I got a sponsor, and I tried working my steps, but I was never honest with her. I couldn't be honest with her. I think maybe I was too young at the time. I know other people have gotten sober at a younger age, but for me it was just too soon. Control issues. And I graduated from Prop 36 and then turned 21 a few weeks later, and had my first sober drink 2 weeks after I turned 21. And then started sneaking going to bars with my cousin's maid of honor. And I told my boyfriend at the time that we were going to bars, but he thought that I wasn't drinking. Until one morning he asked me if I was drinking because he could smell it on my breath. And I said yes. And so, you know, just I felt demoralized and super ashamed. And a few months later, you know, I'd been in and out of recovery throughout that time for almost 3 years, and a really good friend of mine passed away drinking and driving. Some of you might have known him, David Togdazini. He was a sweetheart. And I built an instant resentment against my boyfriend because he didn't want me to hang out with old friends, because he had a good program and we're not supposed to hang out with old people, places, or things. And I started hanging out with my old friends to go to his funeral, and it just kind of went downhill from there. And I started meeting more people that were just like me and that condoned my behavior. And I broke up with him drunk and told him I couldn't do it anymore. And I met this girl, Dana, who was just like me. She drank like I did and had just gone through a breakup like I did. And we had a lot of fun together for a short time. It lasted about 3 months. We were, I honestly can't even believe the amount of alcohol we drank. And, you know, it's embarrassing to admit this, but I'm one of those really annoying people that gets really drunk and then passes out either on the bed or the couch or on the ground and pisses everywhere. And so I ruined a lot of people's couches, and, you know, I'd wake up in the morning just so embarrassed, and, you know, I'd wake Dana up, and it's before anybody else was awake, and we'd leave. Me thinking that they wouldn't notice. One good thing that happened from Dana was I met my husband, my future husband, the man that I'm with now. But one night, you know, I passed out on someone's couch, and she took my car for a joyride, got a DUI, and my car was impounded. And for whatever reason, they wouldn't let me get my car out of impound. And I still had AA very fresh in my mind, and I was trying to practice AA principles while I was still drinking. And I told her, you're not a bad person, you just made a bad mistake. You know, I forgive you, just pay me for my car. And she made two payments. You know, I was letting her pay me back in payments, and by her third paycheck, she said she couldn't do it anymore. But, you know, what about me? And so I had to sue her, And I remember that day in court, I was super hungover and wanted to just get out of there. I won that case, but I've never seen a cent. And I continued to drag my boyfriend at the time through my hell and continued to down talk into grade AA because I didn't want him to know that it could possibly be a good thing. And a lot happened. I stayed out there for 4 years dragging him through that and dragging myself through my own personal hell. And the more and more I drank, the more and more I hated myself because I knew I could do better. They say a head full of AA and a stomach full of alcohol just don't mix, and it's so true. My husband and I got married in 2012, and, you know, things were going good for a while. I had calmed down on my drinking. We had it under control. We bought a king-size mattress, and 'cause I ruined the one before. And then I started working at the Cracked Crab and found more people just like me. And, you know, there was one night, it was Cinco de Mayo, and we went to Scotty's bar across the street. It was Sunday Funday. And I was supposed to drive my friend Rhonda home, but I kept taking shots at Jameson. And thank God, there were so many God shots in my life, especially there at the end. I lost my keys. I must have, like, thrown them away or something. And I couldn't find them. So we ended up at, what's that bar called, Harry's. And they called me a cab. And I made it home at 3 in the morning. My husband couldn't get a hold of me. He had no idea what I was up to. And the poor thing, he worked so hard. And, you know, that was partially, you know, I drank partially because I was lonely and also just because I hated myself. And, you know, he was just so happy that I was safe. And so we got the truck towed the next day and had a new key made. And we continued to try and control my drinking. We tried no hard alcohol, just beer. We tried only drinking at home, only drinking when we're playing beer pong. And I was always constantly looking for that drink that I could hide from him, that he wouldn't see me drinking, because it wasn't enough. And I went to San Luis with a friend from work, and I didn't mean to get drunk. I never meant to get that faded. And we ended up back at her house. I guess I thought her baby car seat was a blanket and tried to pull it over myself. And her roommate was flirting with me, and she went upstairs to check on her son, and I took off. I was like, I can't do this. And it turned out I had a flat tire, and I kept going. And it blew out somewhere on the freeway. And I called my husband and told him that my tire ran out of batteries. And so he hopped in his car, which the brakes were going out of, and he came to try and find me. He's driving all over San Luis, Rio Grande. And someone had driven up and pulled over behind me and asked if I was okay. And I guess it scared me. I very vaguely remember this. And I said, I'm fine. And I hopped back in my truck. I waited for them to leave, and I left. And I drove home from wherever I was. It was before Pismo. On three tires going 65 miles an hour. And I made it home. again, another God shot. I have no idea how I made it home. And my husband finally showed up at home. I'm passed out in bed with piss all over the place. And yeah, our new king size mattress. And I, you know, at that point in time, you know, that demoralization became normal to me. You know, that peeing the bed, I didn't care anymore. I just wanted to drink and numb the way that I felt because I hated myself so much. And so I think I stopped drinking for a little while. I white-knuckled it, and I had almost 30 days, and I started drinking again, and it was so much worse. I picked up even beyond where I had left it off. And I was blacking out after only two shots, and ruining our mattress more and more, and just really wrecking everything that I had. My last drunk was with this girl, Jennifer. And thank God I met her because she really kind of helped me reach my bottom that I needed to hit. And I wanted to be like her. She lived with her parents, but her room was outside of the house, like it was separate. She had a great relationship with her parents, but she had this little mini fridge stocked full of wine. And that was what I wanted. You know, I wanted to be able to just sit at home and get drunk all day. But I was drinking with her and her stepdad. And we were reminiscing, and I was talking about how I used to coach gymnastics and cheerleading, and I was really happy. And they're talking, and I wanted to show them how I used to do gymnastics, so I tried to do a backflip on concrete. And I hit my head and jammed my fingers. I don't know if they were broken or not. They were black and blue, and I got a really bad concussion. And had to work the next day just feeling horrible and see the look on Jennifer's face, you know. Thank God her parents drove me home. When my husband got home, he's like, where's the truck? I'm like, oh, it's parked outside. I didn't know. And the next morning, my husband told me he would divorce me if I continued to drink. And that he thought maybe I should try going back to AA. And it kind of clicked right then and there that I needed to do something. And I knew that if I came back to AA that I had to do it the right way. I needed to be honest and open-minded and go to as many meetings as possible, get a sponsor right away, and do whatever she tells me to do. And so I came to meetings, and I bought a big book after my first meeting. And I think it took me maybe a month, and I found Sarah and asked her to be my sponsor, which little did I know, but, you know, thank God I chose her. She's, like, really into service work. So when Jessica asked her who she should have speak, she said me, which is great because after having my son, you know, it was really hard to be of service, which is a huge part of recovery. And my first year was great. I had a meeting commitment and I was the secretary of the steering committee and I felt really connected. And you know, my first step is exactly everything that I just told you guys, that unmanageability of my life, and I had no power, no control over what was going on. I knew that I had a higher power because of everything that had happened that I actually lived through, so that was really easy. And, you know, the turning things over to God, that's a daily basis thing. You know, I fight it and then I give it over. And when I do, it's always better. I think I had 2 months sober when I realized that working at the Crack Crab was a major trigger for me, because I was still working with all those people that I used to drink with. And I put my 2 weeks notice in because I was willing to go to any length to stay sober. And so I quit my job, and my husband completely supported me. And we ended up having to sell the condo that we were living in because his parents owned it and they needed to pay hospital bills. So we moved in with them to save up to buy our own house. We still live with them. But I wouldn't trade it for anything, you know. I think had we stayed in the condo, things might not have worked out the way they have. At 6 months sober, I told my husband that I was going to stop taking birth control. And he said, okay. You know, he had seen a huge change. And he's a huge advocate for AA. You know, he's really seen what this program can do for someone like me. I've actually heard him talk to other people about our experience, and it's beautiful. He's a normie, and he loves Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, I have a problem with setting high expectations. My pregnancy didn't go at all how I thought it would. I figured it would take a few months to get pregnant. We would have all this time to plan. No, I was pregnant a month later. And, you know, I wouldn't trade it for anything, but trying to stay sober with all those hormones was really hard. And I found out my dad had cancer again when I was about 5 or 6 months pregnant. And by practicing the principles that I've learned in AA, I was able to get through that without drinking. I was able to give it to God and know that whatever happened was what was supposed to happen. And he had surgery. They didn't even have to do chemo. And he's cancer-free. But the doctor really laid into my dad about, you know, if you continue to drink the way you drink, the cancer will come back. And I don't know how he does it, but he has cut himself back to 1 or 2 beers a week. But they live in Idaho now. He's able to keep himself really busy doing the things that he likes to do, the fishing, the hunting, quad riding. And I am so proud of him. What else happened? Expectations. So when my son was almost due, the doctor, you know, told me that he was really little, and that they needed to induce him 2 weeks early because of how little he was. They needed to get him out and have him start eating. And so we go to the hospital and start the induction process. And that morning, I didn't know that I was having contractions for a few hours. I just thought it was really bad cramps. And the nurses come running in and they say, get on your left side. And it turned out the contractions were making his heart rate drop because of how little he was. And the doctor came in and said, we're going to have to do a C-section. And I'm just like, oh my God, this is not what I had planned at all. And I was really scared. But, you know, the best thing that's come from AA is having a close connection with my higher power. And as soon as the doctor said that, I knew my God was right there next to me. And so I was like, okay, let's do this. And within 45 minutes, I had my son in my arms. And he was 4 pounds, 14 ounces, but perfectly healthy. Super healthy little baby boy. And I am so proud of that, you know. He is over 20 pounds now. He's in 12-month clothing, and he's barely 10 months old. Not even 10 months old. So that's pretty cool, you know. one of the things that I've been really lucky to work on is those character defects. And, you know, when me and Sarah worked on my fourth step, we were in her Jeep right there in the parking lot. And the biggest character defect was that self-loathing. That was what I drank over. And so I've really had to learn how to forgive myself for those things that I've done while I was drinking. And sometimes those feelings creep back in, you know, even though I've forgiven myself, you know, I start to get upset about those things again. And it's like, no, you know, you've been sober for 2 years. It's okay. It's in the past. I don't have to live in the past anymore. I always want to remember what it was like, but I don't have to live there anymore. And I'm still working on the laziness, the anger, the anxiety, but that's all getting better. What else happened? After having my son, I wasn't really able to make it to as many meetings, and I had to give up my service commitments because, you know, it was a lot harder than I expected it to be. And sleep deprivation is really hard. But I didn't want to drink. I had the urge lots of times. I remember he was maybe 2 weeks old, and me and my husband are walking around the grocery store, and we walked by champagne, and I was just like, oh gosh, that bubbly, giggly feeling. I would love that right now, because I think all women get at least just a little bit of postpartum, whether they think they will or not, and I did not expect it, and I just didn't like the way that I felt, and I was mad at myself for wanting to drink. So whenever I got that feeling, I made sure that I made it to a meeting. I got to apologize to my grandma for all those things that I did to her. And I told her that I wanted to pay her back for the car that she bought me. And she said it was okay, that I didn't have to pay her back, that she was just proud of me. And the other night, you know, staying sober has always been my living amends to my husband, but the other night, me and my husband are driving home from work, and I finally was like, gosh, I've never actually, like, said I'm sorry to him. You know, I said it a million times when I was drinking, but I meant it at the time, but then I always, you know, did the same action. And I told him, I was just like, you know, I am so sorry. I put you in hell for 4 years. I'm so sorry. And he's like, yeah, that sucked. But we're that's exactly what he said too. But we're past that. I am so happy with where we're at today. Neither of us would trade it for the world. He still works full-time, and he's going to school full-time because he knows that we are worth it. You know, I don't think he would go through all this trouble if I was still drinking. You know, I wouldn't even be a part of his life. Otto wouldn't even be alive if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. And my mom came out here all the way from Idaho to celebrate my 2-year birthday, and she doesn't even come out here for my belly button birthday, which is so cool. Every day gets a little better and better. Now that he's sleeping through the night, I'm starting to get that mental clarity back. The urge to drink hasn't been with me in a long time. I'm making it to more and more meetings, and I'm feeling closer to AA and more grateful for AA than ever. I really couldn't have done it without this program, and for the newcomer, seriously, don't leave before the miracle happens. And it's not just one miracle. There's so many of them. I'm so excited for the future because I know it's just going to keep getting better. Thank you so much.